Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Now, we were joined today by Adrian Smith, guitarist with Iron Maiden, and Keen Fisherman. He's written a book that sort of melds the two. And not an obvious fishing rock and roll book, but it works, doesn't it, Andy?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Nigel Botherway being in a heavy metal band.
Well, we know Keith Arthur was, don't we? Alex Horn from Taskmaster joins us. He was on good form, talking a bit of grassroots football, amongst other things. And Gary Bloom, the sports psychotherapist. He was very interested on Harry Maguire, wasn't he?
Very interesting. And we had a chat about last night's game and a general chat.
Other stuff. So here it all is.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Oh, yes. Good afternoon, everybody. And, yeah, wonderful night's football yet again.
It was it was a contest. It wasn't the greatest game we'd ever seen, but it was a contest, wasn't it, for half an hour. And then a player goes off and they get a penalty and it's 1-0. And the likelihood is at that point it's going to end 1-0. And that's the way it panned out. I mean, England gave it a crack and they had some chances, but you've got another hour of this and probably nothing is really going to change. The whole dynamic of the game has changed, isn't it?
We were texting each other and the only thing that was any good is when you said to me, Sisto.
I thought I'd get him some advertising work. Sistos are doing it for themselves. I was toying with that. I couldn't really come up with anything. I've got to be honest, had wandered.
I went off on a whole thing about how he's giving the game man appeal and blah blah blah. You didn't get what I was talking
about. I thought you were talking
about. I looked at that was Oxo.
Yeah. You were trying to do dodgy Bisto gags that weren't working.
That's how good it was. But 20 minutes in, Martin Tyler already mentioning the disciplined defending from both teams. You think that's never a good sign, is it, in a football match?
This is one for the purists.
I know Henry Winter took me to task and everything about international football. It's just that this time of the year, I mean, this weekend, we're going to have the Merseyside Derby, the Old Firm Derby, City Arsenal, Spurs. How can what we had last weekend be compared to what we're going to get this weekend? Yeah. It's just so tedious. This international breaks in the middle of the season, they're just boring. The football's rubbish. What did Gareth learn about this whole period? Nothing. How to fend off the press. That's about it. Really?
The referee, though, was pretty terrible. He was one of those worst sorts of refs. That the Danes very quickly realised that if you screamed louder, you'd get the free kick. So early on, all you could hear was, ah! But then within half an hour, it's, ah! You could really hear the screaming. I got rid of the England banner. I couldn't stand it. So I went with a clean feed. And they were and every time...
The England banner went on the fake crowd.
Oh, yes, they were.
I couldn't hear them.
Blimey, you must have zoned out. It was all England.
I could hear England, but no. I couldn't hear the band.
Oh,
I
was thinking, this is good. Steptoe. And
really?
Many, well, yeah, yeah. I went with a clean feed so I could hear the high decibel.
I couldn't hear that at all.
But there was a lot of screaming going on.
I'd have kicked my telly in if I'd heard that.
Even the pen he doesn't give straight away. He doesn't react to the challenger, he reacts to the scream from the player. He was a poor ref. He was a pretty poor ref.
Poor.
And I think what happened with Reece James was that the sort of thing you can say to a Premier League ref at the end of a game, which is water off a duck's back.
You're a terrible cheat and you're useless.
But, you know,
why don't you take a career in insurance?
I just think, you know, if you're Mike Dean or John Moss or Michael Oliver and he comes up and he says something he shouldn't, you think, oh, he's a kid, you know, he's not thinking, he's lost, you know, go away. But this guy is straight out with a card.
Oh,
and I think it was an error of judgment. Mm. I think if he's learned anything last night is that beyond Premier League referees, you can't say stuff like that and expect to get away with it, which was silly because he was brilliant. He was England's best player.
So a very interesting piece by Jonathan Liu in The Guardian today about Mount and Grealish and about, you know, sort of how Mount represents the sort of academy prospect, you know, academy player, the made good, the sort of top six player, and Grealish is more sort of like, you know,
Maverick,
Rufford Diamond. I mean, I think Mount's a brilliant player. I don't even think that you should be even comparing the two.
No.
Two really, but there was a point last night where you just think, "Oh, bring him on." You know,
well,
bring
I did say to you, didn't I? I mean, with 5 minutes left, that was probably 5 minutes too late. But with 5 minutes left, with a substitution left, and you're looking, we're looking more dangerous from set pieces than anything else. So why not bring him on? Why not bring him on to win some set pieces?
He just doesn't rate him. That's it. He just doesn't rate him. Yeah. Otherwise, you would have brought him on.
I mean, he did reason it out. He was asked why he'd not played Grealish, and he said, you know, we needed a lot of pace, we needed a lot of runners. But, you know, he brought Calvert-Lewin on and played him wide, didn't he, instead? Yeah. So anyway, look. I think John Cross from the Mirror is probably right. We don't need a clamour, because a clamour puts far more pressure on an England manager. Mm. When everybody's saying, well, why didn't he get a game and get loads of callers on Talk Sports saying this?
What about Friends Clamour?
Friends Clamour, yeah, there will be a clamour for him, certainly. There certainly was in Austria all those years ago. But if you have a, what we're better off doing is saying nothing, and then get Gareth under no pressure, and he'll just say, well, I decided to play him. There was no clamour that affected me. So let's back off. We'll back off and let him get on with it, and we'll see what happens. Bit of reverse psychology.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Me and Jacobs here on TalkSport. Well, Monsters of River and Rock is written by Adrian Smith, the guitarist of Iron Maiden. So if you like Iron Maiden, you'll love the book, of course, because there's plenty of tales from life on the road and more with the band. If you love fishing, there's plenty for you in there. And of course, if you love both, you're in dreamland.
Perfect.
And Adrian joins us now. Good afternoon, Adrian.
Hi, chaps. You all right?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah. It's an interesting hybrid, this, isn't it? Because it's not many a rock and roll memoir has sort of tales of carp fishing in them.
Probably, I can't think of any. It's certainly very different. Yeah, you won't find it in your average, rock star autobiography, I suppose.
There was a period when you first started playing in bands that you stopped going fishing because you felt it wasn't very rock and roll, wasn't it?
No, the '70s was all about, not being. You didn't go down the gym, and you didn't do this and that. You know, you just sat around trying to write great songs and trying to be elegantly wasted. You know, like the Rolling Stones. So fishing, you know, I couldn't imagine people like Richie Blackmore, you know, ledgering or Paul Kossoff trying to catch carp on the surface. You know, I just didn't seem cool. So. Yeah, for 10 years I gave it up. And ironically, when I rejoined, when I joined Iron Maiden, a couple of the guys were keen anglers, or lapsed anglers, should I say. So I started again. So it was a 10-year gap.
Wow.
But I felt like I had to be dedicated to my, you know, to my dream of being a professional musician. So I just put everything else aside.
There's been a real boom in fishing since lockdown. The numbers actually doing it. And I think that, and of course... Bob Mortimer and Paul Whitehouse's show, which everybody loved. So, I mean, have you enjoyed that fishing has suddenly become the opposite of what you thought it was, become quite sexy?
Sexy fishing. actually, from my point of view, I mean, the banks are a little more crowded now.
All right.
Rivers, I fish the River Thames a lot. You get a lot of people, you know, on their boats, paddle boards, swimmers, everyone's at it, you know, which is great, and a lot more fishermen, which is great for fishing in general.
Yeah. Now, when you're
a healthy way to you know, it's a healthy way to spend your time. You're out, you know, the fresh air. You know, I do a lot of walking when I fish. You know, so you know, it's exercise.
Sure. I think a lot more people are realising that, certainly, which is why they're either going back to it or in some cases, taking it up. But when customs search the bags of a rock and roll band, they probably have expectations about what they're going to find. But worms probably wouldn't be among them. But you'd put some worms sometimes in there, wouldn't you? Just when you knew. And you used to often, as soon as you got the band's itinerary for a tour, you'd be checking out the good fishing spots.
After a while, we spent a lot of time in America in the 80s. And I didn't know it at the time, but America is full of carp. And I always associated carp with, estate lakes in England. And it's very secretive, very mysterious carp fishing when I was a kid. But in America, they were everywhere. And that's actually where I caught my first carp. We were doing a gig. We were supporting the Scorpions, a band called the Scorpions.
Yeah.
We were sort of plugging our Number of the Beast album, and it was in Wisconsin, and that's where I caught my first carp. Yeah, we used to look at the itinerary and go, yeah, there's a river next to the hotel here, there's a lake here. You know, you gotta try and spend your off time not getting into trouble, especially in those days, you know, and it was a good way to spend a day off, you know.
Yeah. So you weren't alone then. You weren't the lone fisherman in the band or amongst the crew and everything. So you had a bit of company when you did your fishing when you were touring.
A few of us did, yeah. Clive Burr, the drummer, sadly no longer with us. He was a keen angler. He was a good angler. We used to go. Davey Murray, he'd have a little dabble with us. The other guitarist and a couple of the security guys used to go. So yeah, we used to make a day of it. You know, rent a car and make a bit of an adventure of it, you know.
But you've done all sorts of fishing, isn't it? Not just carp, I mean, specimen fishing, where you catch all the different ones, and then even sharks.
I was trying to stay clear of sharks. I do a lot of what you call bone fishing in the tropics, and you're fishing in shallow water, and sometimes if you get a little out of your depth, you will get sharks come and have a look, you know, and I've had a few close encounters. Bears in Canada, we've seen bears very close quarters out in the interior of British Columbia. I've been very lucky enough to travel not only on with the band, but I used to enjoy traveling a lot in my off time. Tasmania, New Zealand, there's a whole chapter about that.
Yeah,
New Zealand was fantastic, unspoilt fishing paradise. I mean, the water is pristinely clean and you know, there's a lot. I wrote about that in the book as well.
The pictures in the middle of the book are amazing because half of them could be on the cover of Kerrang and the other half could be on the cover of Angler's Mail. It's you holding a fish or you holding a guitar, isn't it?
Well, you know, for two passions. I started off, you know, writing about, you know, a fishing book, you know, but I found just to incorporate a little bit of the music side made it a bit more interesting, you know, maybe for people who weren't fanatical fishermen like me, you know. So people who've read it, who are not fishermen, you know, can sort of enjoy as well.
There's a few bits as well where the two clash. I love the idea that you went fishing with Scott Gorham, the Thin Lizzy guitarist. So that's a bit of both, isn't it, really?
Yes, Scott got involved in a corporate day's fishing down on the River Test.
Right.
And he rang me up and desperately wanted me to go with him because I knew something about fishing and he was feeling very uncomfortable. He'd never been before. So I just went down for a bit of moral support, but he never took it up, you know.
Oh, right.
Unfortunately.
Did you ever get anybody to take it up?
Who'd have thought I'd go? No, you know, I do a lot of fishing on my own. You know, that's what I like about it. I like the peace and quiet. It's only recently I've got back into taking friends and family members. Yeah. And I've encouraged a few people who've sort of lapsed anglers to take it up again. Yeah, for sure.
You know what? That's funny you should say, because one of our presenters here, comedian Charlie Baker, he said exactly that he's gone back to fishing. And he likes going on his own. He likes the solitude of it. He enjoys that more than anything. And I think you're probably, you know, as I say, you're definitely not alone in that. A lot of people like it for that reason.
Well, you spend so much time running around doing, you know, getting caught up in, you know, modern life. And I think it's a great antidote to that, really, you know. And it's been great for me, you know. I'm glad my dad introduced me to it when I was very young.
And you introduced your lad to it as well, haven't you? You've got your son fishing as well.
Yeah, he goes. He likes to come out with me now and again. Yeah, he likes a bit of a dabble, and it's great. It's a great way of spending time together. You just get to spend the whole day, not only the fishing, you're driving, you go for something to eat, you have a pint, you know, it's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, the book. Some great old tales in there. So go and check it out. Adrian Smith's book, Monsters of River and Rock, My Life as Iron Maiden's Compulsive Angler. It's published by Virgin Books and is out now in hardback. Our thanks to Adrian.
It's Steve, 64. It's not bad. He can still play 90 minutes.
He was always a very good player. I think they used to have these legendary kickabouts with the Road Crew over the years.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Taskmaster returns tonight. It's in a new home. Yippee. On Channel 4. Obviously, a new collection of comedians. And the co-host, creator, friend of the show, Liverpool and Chesham United fan, Alex Horn makes a welcome return. Alex, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Paul and Andy. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks, thank you. Well, it's good to have the show back. And how difficult has it been to make a kind of sort of COVID version of the show and the tasks?
It's been all right, thank you. Yeah, because we moved to Channel 4, we had to have a little break anyway, so a year-long break from the screen. So we managed to film a lot of stuff before March, and there's a handful of tasks we've done since, and you'll see on screen the moments when that's happening. So there's a bit of touching, and then there's a bit of 2 metre distance.
Yeah.
The studio was the difficult bit. That's where we have to change things. So Greg and I are far apart. He can't sort of reach me anymore, which is a relief. But there's no audience. We filmed it and then showed it to a cinema full of people. Well, half full of people. And I think we ended up with something we're really happy with, and it reflects the world we're in, but it's a massive distraction from it. That's the idea.
The first question I should have asked, because look, you know what it's like. Not everybody will watch the channel it was on before, but they will watch Channel 4. And there may be some people out there, not many after this many series, I would think, who don't know what Taskmaster is. So in a nutshell, Alex, maybe you could explain it to us.
I can have a go. I'm still not very good at this. But Greg Davis, the mountainous Greg Davis, is the taskmaster. I'm his little assistant, and we set tasks to five comedians, and they come to this little house one at a time. They never see each other. They never know how each other's done. And it's things like get the most tears in an egg cup, something like that. They've got 20 minutes to do it. Then they do another one, and eventually they do about 40, and eventually they come to the studio. They meet for the first time, tell them how they got on, and Greg casts acerbic judgment on them, and there's no script, there's no warning, it's all completely real. So you see these comedians stripped bare and occasionally showing genius, but mostly idiocy.
The task, I mean, you really create,
in a nutshell.
Yes, that's it.
You create the task, and they are ingenious. I mean, that must take a bit of work. I mean, 9 series worth you've done so far.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but I would say, you know, you do a radio show every day. That must take a bit of work. It's what I do. People, I get a lot of, well, not a lot of credit, but some people think it's must be so hard coming up with all these tasks. But there are worse jobs. I just sit in my bath with a waterproof notepad and scribble down silly ideas, and then these comedians come along and bring them to life.
Now, this series, you line up Daisy May Cooper, people who know from this country, Johnny Vegas, right, of course, Catherine Parkinson from the IT crowd, Richard Herring, and also Marwan Rizwan, who's done, we see him on TV doing lots of stand-up. So a good lineup.
Yeah, great lineup. I always hope it's going to be a great lineup, because you don't really know how they're going to react, but we're just looking for five different personalities, and we've definitely got this one, you know, at one end Johnny, and well, we all know Johnny, but you see his tender side a bit more, because he's a real artist.
Potter, isn't he?
You see that, and you see his traditional breakdowns. And then, yeah, Catherine Parkinson, you probably think you know from the IT crowd and so on, but you very rarely see her be herself, and that's quite a revelation.
I very much enjoyed our old friend David Baddiel's efforts in the last series. Yeah. He was very funny. He wasn't particularly great at it, but he was very funny.
You said he went on a bit of a journey, because he obviously thought it was going to be quite easy, but then got quite frustrated with it.
Yeah, well, I think he's getting quite frustrated with us, because we always cite him now as someone who was particularly interesting, because he's famous for his massive brain. But that was very rarely on display for our show.
this is true.
But he was very funny. He's one of my favourites. And I found him so likeable, and sort of you could relate to him a lot more, having seen how he reacts in the crisis, not well.
Visually, the show looks good as well, and the brake bumpers and all the stuff you do with that. And I noticed from the advert, then, because it's been on Dave for 9 years, look at this. Alex has had Channel 4 shaved into his chest.
Yeah, I think that was probably done on the system. You haven't actually physically done that with your chest hair, have you?
Not allowed to tell you that. but whatever happened, it was. I did have to have something on my chest for the photo. It's not done digitally afterwards.
Oh, okay.
I had to wear something,
right,
to make it look as real painful, and it was painful. And I, yeah, I'm also quite proud of the photos. Down where I live in Chesham, I think they target the adverts to make people in the show feel like there's a lot of adverts out for it. So everywhere where I go, I see myself, as do my children, and they are furious.
Now, you mentioned Chesham there. I think your lad plays for the club, junior ranks. But I was looking, we were chatting earlier on, I was double-checking which league your local club are in. And we were quite surprised by just the amount of travelling that Chesham United do. In Chesham's league are amongst Hayes and Yedding and Wharton Casuals, relatively local teams. You find Dorchester, Wimborne, Merthyr, Truro and Tiverton.
Truro's a long way to go.
And Paul. I mean, who came up with that league? Yeah. That's blimey.
Well, yeah, the last game was against the Swindon Submarines, which is a great name. The trouble is with the south of England, it does get quite wide at the bottom, so you have to stretch it. But we look forward to it. I mean, I go when I can, which isn't often enough, but we always try to do one decent away trip a year because, you know, they're the ones that you really remember because you have to stay away. So they're having a funny season. We're getting big crowds because you can go and watch non-league football.
Yeah.
But yet to score a goal at home.
Oh, yeah. I see you're having a bit of a tough season. I went to a game last weekend, just one of my local teams, and it was great. It was great to just go and see some live football again. And
it's better than ever. They're actually, they're ninth, Chesham. They're doing all right. They're doing all right away from home. But, the feeling at the club is better than ever because they've managed to work out how to sell beer in a, you know, a regulatory fashion, and everyone feels safe, and it's a chance to see people, but you're outside, you're 2 metres apart. It's sort of win-win until they don't win. Win-win draw.
Yeah. I've also been enjoying your YouTube channel, Bad Golf, which is...
Oh, good.
Basically what it says, isn't it? not that bad from what I've seen.
Oh, it's not great. I've 24 handicap and I very rarely play to that. But it's another sport you can do in these situations. You know, you can get outside and meet three friends and do something and take your mind off everything. So, you know, I'm really enjoying that. But my playing partner, John Robbins, the comedian, he's playing a lot of golf because he doesn't have children. And, he might have to move to a different channel soon.
He's getting better. That's the trouble. Is you want it to be you can have a proper battle. But if he starts, you know, if he starts slaughtering you,
unless you've got that professional thing, the ball tracking thing. I don't know where you buy that from.
All the gear, no idea. Is that what you're claiming?
It's good because you can see where the ball's gone with that. It's excellent. Right.
Yeah. Well, I want quite a cheap one, so it sort of guesses where the ball's gone. It's very rarely an accurate reflection of it.
I see.
And back in the days when I was doing TV Burp, Australia did a version of it, and this guy came on who looked nothing like Harry and didn't really act like Harry, but still did that kind of looks to camera thing. They kind of kept elements of it in. Mm. And I bring that up because it's a bit weird to watch, but I bring that because Taskmaster has been sold to different parts of the world. Belgium, Sweden, Spain, Denmark, Finland. What's Icelandic?
That's amazing.
Greg and Alex like? Is it?
It's so funny. Yeah. Well, I get sent these tapes of their versions of it, and they're always these slightly grotesque versions of us. I mean, they're very charming people, I'm sure, but they're always massively out of proportion to everyone else. And I'm always, I've normally got a moustache and a bow tie and quite a squeaky little voice. And it's often languages we don't understand. I've seen the Belgian version in Flemish, so I don't understand a word of it. But I find it's sort of a purer version of the show. You just understand the physical side of it and don't need to worry about the little jokes. So I'm trying to persuade people to put them on in this country. I think they're very funny.
Yeah. And if they've done it in the States, I would imagine that would be a market. Or is it culturally a bit weird for them?
We had a go. The States have flirted with us. I did a one series over there with a different Taskmaster, a guy called Reggie Watts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
James Corden's house band. Mm. It didn't quite hit the spot. A few changes. Yeah, I learned a lot. I had a nice 6 weeks away from the family. So I think, you know, we'll keep trying.
Yeah, don't worry.
It is a British programme, I think.
They love it in Reykjavik. That's all that matters. That's the thing.
Is it all still shot in Chiswick? I always recognise
you're part
bits
of the world. Yeah. Well, that's where they come out. They're trying to get you involved.
Duke's Meadow and all that. Yeah,
a nice little bit of local knowledge there for Bob and Arbroath.
Well, you know.
That's right. Yeah, we've not changed it for Channel 4. They've been very true to their word, and they're just delivering the show that people hopefully still want.
Good stuff. Brilliant. So 9 o'clock tonight, Alex, on Channel 4 for the next, how was it, 10 weeks or...?
Yeah, up to Christmas, pretty much. And there's I have to tell you, there's a podcast the following day, a sort of post-match analysis with Ed Gamble. And there's a sort of family-friendly version on Sunday afternoons on E4, because there's a lot of kids watching now, and there's a bleak version, 5:45 on Sunday. I think it's 6 o'clock from now on, but I think that's a good idea.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
A lot of talk last night in the wake of Harry Maguire's sending off, of just how much he's struggling. Didn't have the best of games against Spurs. It's not really been happening for him at all. The stuff that went over on in Greece over the summer, and it would appear on the face of it that he's that's very much on his mind. We thought we would chat to Gary Bloom, who brought us on the sporting couch here on TalkSport. He's a sports psychologist and works for a number of football clubs and individual players as well. Good afternoon, Gary.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good to speak to you. Thank you for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure, yeah. I mean, we thought we would certainly turn to you today because there's two schools of thought, and Jamie Redknapp sort of voiced the alternative last night on Sky that... He said there are players that will want to play through this and will keep going until they come out the other side. Same we touched on with Emil Heskey. And because, you know, being on the pitch is their escape, their salvation from everything else that's kind of on their mind at the moment. And there are others that maybe need a bit of a break from the game. I mean, you've probably encountered both kinds out and about at different football clubs.
Yeah, I think Jamie Redknapp's absolutely right. I don't know Harry Maguire, never worked with him. So it all depends on the individual psychology of the individual player. Look, we all respond to trauma and difficulty in different ways, and that's all of us, whether you're a sports person or not. And it depends on what is best for Harry Maguire. My feeling is that if it's possible for him to get some sort of psychological help to find out what he needs right now, whether he needs to come out the Manchester United team, whether he needs to lose the captain's armband for a while, or he needs to actually, as they'd say in the football club, crack on and play more games. The problem is, if you put a player who is psychologically in a difficult situation into a game and something happens in that game that might not be his fault but could be his fault, people are bound to point the finger and say, ah, you should have rested him. So in some respects, you're a hostage to fortune if you play him in a big game, as Manchester United have at the weekend against Newcastle, and something happens around Maguire, people are bound to say, look, Ollie got it wrong, he should have dropped him.
Yeah, just compounded. I mean, it's difficult for a manager, but maybe you should take the decision out of Harry Maguire's hands. But they tend to sort of say, well, leave it up to the player. He wants to play, so we should let him play. That's kind of the way football goes, isn't it?
Yeah, this sort of brings to mind a conversation I had with a football manager who said to me, would you like to be in a position to pass a player psychologically fit to play? And I said, no, I wouldn't. That would be awful. It would put a lot of pressure on me. Mm. And it's almost like the manager's taking away the responsibility of deciding himself. Mm. But somebody has to make a call that whether Harry's in a good state of mind. And my experience is that when something like this happens, it's a relatively short period of time with a psychologist or a psychotherapist that can turn this these people around. This is not long-term work. But if you think about the incident at Mykonos and the unfortunate legal implications of that, and if you think of that as a kind of PTSD incident, this trauma that he might have experienced, has that ever been dealt with psychologically? And we all are very, very prone to not being able to do our jobs particularly well if we've had some sort of trauma. That, to me, looks like a trauma that may not have been dealt with, but I'm just guessing.
What might be the process at a club like Manchester United? Say he reports back to Manchester United. Would Ole say, I think it would be good, Harry, if you went and had a chat with, you know, whoever is the sports psychologist at Manchester United, or he may want to go and have a conversation, and then would the sports psychologist talk to the manager? Would they have a conversation after that? And then would they decide on that basis?
Well, Paul, you put your finger on a huge problem inside English football, because I've spoken to international footballers who said the last person they would ever admit they had a problem to is the club psychologist, because they were terrified that whatever was said in that session would come back to the manager. And that's why they often come outside the club to people like me. And one footballer I worked with, very famous in international footballer, said, the first thing he said to me was, how do I know you're not going to ring up my manager and say exactly what I'm going to tell you? And I said, well, by the laws of my profession, I'm not allowed to. But it's interesting that that was the first question he asked me when he shook my hand and met me.
Wow.
So that doubt, that uncertainty is going to swim around football clubs, and there have been some high profile examples of confidences which have been broken, which have landed the players in hot water. So there's a whole question of trust, and that's why I often work with football agents who will ring me up and say, look, I've got a player who's really struggling, Gary, can you give us a hand? And as I said before, Paul and Andy, it's quite a relatively quick turnaround if the player's prepared to engage in the process.
So the idea of the sports psychologist being an extension of the staff, that's not really a situation there. I mean, you kind of sense that could be the case, but it clearly isn't, because they fear that there's still players out there who feel going to the sports psychologist, speaking to him, is a sign of weakness.
Yeah. Correct, you've got it. But I work in a football club at Oxford where we have worked very, very hard around this, but my early days there were beset by this problem, by players saying, well, if I tell you this, how do I know you're not going to tell the manager? And it's only by being in the club for now, a couple of years, I've been able to prove by what I do and how I do it, that just isn't the case. But if there's a serious incident of what we call safeguarding, people's own not only mental health, but physical safety is at risk, that throws a completely different aspect into the work. So if I thought the player might damage himself or is being damaged by somebody else, I would have to say to the player, look, we're going to have to report this together. But I never go behind the player's back and do that. It's something we do with the player's agreement.
That's interesting, isn't it? Mm. Football as a game is very strong on mental health and preaches good mental health to its players. But the culture within the clubs, it doesn't seem to tally with that, Gary.
You couldn't have put it more accurate. It's a football more than rugby, more than cricket, more than any other sport. Would be players are very, very nervous of what we call vulnerability, putting your hand up and saying, I'm struggling, chaps. I don't know what I'm doing. And I, from the outside, and we're all guessing about what's going on with Harry Maguire, it looks like there's somebody who's struggling with maybe something you and I know nothing about. He might have other personal issues going on in his life. And I'm always absolutely amazed when I work with a player and you're thinking, oh, it's bound to be this. It's his loss of form. He hasn't scored or he's been injured. Then a bombshell will suddenly drop into the conversation. And I often walk away from those meetings and think, how would anybody know that? So you and I don't know what's going on in the private life of anybody. And the thing I always, when I was being trained in this profession, somebody said, remember, we are all fighting a battle that nobody else can see. Mm. And I reckon that's Harry Maguire's story as well.
Mm. Very interesting, Gary. Thanks for joining us. All the best.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Bye-bye.
Sports psychotherapist there, Gary Bloom.
I was thinking about him last night, actually, because I've got this, and I want this to happen, but I've got this feeling that Ruben Loftus-Cheek's going to turn out for Fulham. He's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you didn't need to go on loan, just go and see Gary.
No, sometimes it can be a change of environment.
Yeah,
you're just taking the pressure off when it's not working in one place.
I think it's a confidence issue.
Well, look, the bottom line is he's still your player, so whatever happens.
Yeah, no,
you know,
I hope it goes really well.
He's
for
much
him.
Loved
sure,
at the club, and the manager backs him, so he's no doubt he'll come back stronger.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast
from TalkSport.
So, Andy, what do you want to say then? What do you want to get off your chest today?
Well, I don't know if you saw this, Paul. New Nike kits for Liverpool, Tottenham and Chelsea are each made from 18 plastic bottles destined for the landfill. I thought, that's not a metaphor for our season.
Can I just praise my club? I don't often do this, but let me just praise my club. They every year, I'm sure everybody's club, if you're a season ticket holder, they like to give you a little gift pack with your season ticket, or they send it first. And I'm sure the kids love it because it has various things in it, and a little sort of might have some pictures of the ground. And I mean, with respect,
pictures of the ground.
Do you know what I mean? We'd get a key ring or something that holds your mobile phone, which was very useful when we were doing the shows in lockdown, because that's how I was able to look at you. Thanks, Mike. But you know, with respect, it was tut. You know, it was just a pile of old tut in a bag. I mean, I'm sure they sourced it and they put a lot of work and they felt they put a lot of time into it. But they asked the fans last year. They did a survey, which I was part of. I take part most. You can't moan about this stuff and then not be involved in any of the survey. They said, "What would you like to see from the kind of gift bag you get with your season ticket?" And a number of people apparently said. I'm not sure I was one of them. What about a nice gift voucher for the shop, you know, so we could go out and get something we wanted? And fair play to Tottenham, I've just received in my inbox exactly that. They've said, we listened to your feedback last season and replaced the physical gift packs with this digital gift voucher. So it's a tenner and free delivery for any, which is effectively saving you a fiver. And I thought, that's good, isn't it? Your club listening to you. Yeah. For a change, you know, that's the way it should be. But the way
you buy some pictures of the ground,
I'm going to buy some old tuck with it. I'm going to buy exactly what they would have sent me in that box. But that's not the point. This was my idea.
That's good. Yes. Talking of shirts, as I was just before, I don't know if you saw this, but the Liverpool shirt and the Wales shirt, even though they're manufactured by different companies, are so similar. They're both obviously in red.
They've both got
that sort of green and white. Trim slightly the other way round, and it's almost like, you know, when you have in a newspaper, spot the difference. You have to spot the difference between the two shirts.
Oh yes.
It's like one of those.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but shoppers who don't understand sell by dates and use by dates waste 78 lettuces a year. And I was thinking, who eats that much lettuce? Even rabbits don't eat 78 lettuces a year.
That's very true.
It's going to be ridiculous.
I've got a letter. It's a nice letter here at the papers, Andy. Yeah. I thought you'd like this. I wonder what creativity might be used by drinkers in areas where alcohol may not be consumed with a substantial meal. And a lot of people have been doing that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Some publican yesterday did soup of the day, Carling, £2.80. I don't think you're getting away with that.
That's ridiculous.
And Michael Cattle from Mollington in Cheshire wrote to the Telegraph. He said, "I remember a Torquay nightclub." Now the producer's set up. He's interested. I said Torquay. "I remember a Torquay nightclub in the 60s with a supper line. Those are the days, which enabled them to serve alcohol on a Sunday night. They overcame the limitations of the restriction by issuing each guest with a triangular ham sandwich that was worn in the top pocket, like a square. And you'd have it in your suit jacket, and you'd only eat it if the licensing authorities appeared. They say, quick sandwich out the top pocket, and then start eating." Well, so there we are.
Quite a state by the end of the evening.
Just a little tip for if you find yourself in that situation at the moment.
And everybody, football fans, friend, culture secretary Oliver Dowden has blasted the Premier League's pay-per-view experiment. He doesn't think it's a good thing. He said, "I wasn't massively impressed. These things jar with the idea of coming together during the period of crisis for the country." What, like people in a theatre as opposed to...
Yeah.
People in the stadium, they can't come together, but never mind. Well done, you.
Yeah.
You see, AVB, he has claimed that Gareth Bale's success was down to him, basically.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. No one rates AVB higher than AVB himself. He's tremendous.
That's right. He said he came to him very upset, said, "It's not working, Gaffer." Mm. He said, "Oh, no, I'll completely restructure the team to suit you." And that's apparently what he did. And that's when Gareth Bale started to fly at that point. I think Harry might beg to differ, but we'll see.
You know, sometimes when you're combing the papers, you see a headline, you think, oh, this could be interesting. So the headline was, "Beaky is so freaky." I thought, oh, this is going to be about Graham Beecroft.
What's he done? Yeah, yeah.
It's not. It's a new species of pterosaur with a bizarre shaped beak has been unearthed.
Okay, what a great disappointment that story was.
Very much so.
Gemma Collins, your mate Gemma Collins, she does a podcast, I believe, for the BBC, and in it she says she plans to make robot versions of her parents before they pass on. She also plans to make a robot boyfriend and baby, she says. I'm going to look into the process of definitely cloning my parents and possibly a boyfriend and a robot
baby.
She
told Arge.
And I think that's very much what Lord Reith had in mind all those years ago when he said, educate, inform and entertain. Don't you? I think that's almost, if you're looking for the Reithian philosophy, there it is in a nutshell.
Have you heard about Arge's new show? It's basically, he's going to swim the Straits of Gibraltar.
Is he?
We'll see him dodge fairies, sharks and jellyfish on the 10-mile swim, which takes train swimmers more than 4 hours.
Who's talked him into that?
I don't know. It's a mad thing to undergo, but Arge is at his best with a goal in mind.
Really? Great. I played football with him, and he had the goal in mind there, but he didn't play particularly well.
I wouldn't watch that.
Now, well, I don't know if you're the target audience, Gemma Collins' Robot Baby podcast, if that's what it's called. we're going to have a chat with the Moose very shortly and round up some of the best of the press
conferences.
Pay money
to see him swim the Straits of Gibraltar.
Yeah, there was a thing we did on TalkSport called Challenge. Maybe we'll relive or revisit Challenge Moose, a series they did on Breakfast many years ago. I think quite a lot of the things he did, he's mentally scarred him that he was talked into. But this is a man who never shirks a challenge.
That's true.
Ever.
No.
So maybe we'll relive some of his finest moments, as well as hearing from the players and the managers ahead of the weekend's football. I'm blind. We've got a lot of football. We kick off with Everton-Liverpool, 12:30. And then Adrian picks up a game day at 2:30. Then we've got your lot, Andy. Save yourself £15.
Yeah.
Listen to the game at Chelsea-Southampton live on
TalkSport.
Well, no,
me and technology, that's what I'll end up doing, because I won't be able to work out how to get the pay-per-view
bit. Bournemouth, QPR, Borough, Reading, Blackburn Forest, City, Arsenal, Newcastle, Man United. So loads of live football for you. And then on Sunday, Sheffield United.
I wish there was a good international match on, like, the Republic of Ireland versus Finland. So much better, isn't it?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. We're back tomorrow from 1. He's an idiot. So we'll leave it there, and thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.